Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of the Atlanta Business Radio. And Stone, how weird is it? These shows just theme themselves.
Well, I think it's because we're so strategic when we set up these episodes. Do you think that's it?
That's it. We're just like kind of moving people around like on a chessboard.
This is going to be a fantastic show. There is some continuity, a common thread that we will allow to develop as this thing unfolds. First up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, please join me in welcoming to the broadcast, co-founder and CEO with Physician 360, Dr. Angela Fassaro. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, Angela, before we get too far into things, tell us about Physician 360. How are you serving folks?
Absolutely. So our mission at Physician 360 is to empower patients by arming them with the tools that they would need to be diagnosed or treated and treated for simple medical conditions like flu or strep outside of a traditional medical setting. So we're really helping them to avoid unnecessary in-person doctor visits by bringing the doctor to their house, essentially.
Now, is this kind of a membership? Is it like I've heard over the years, like this concierge medicine where you can get kind of preferential treatment in person with certain doctors? Is this the similar model, but over the phone or over computers?
So you definitely receive personalized and very customized care all through your smartphone by a board certified doctor. It's not really membership based, but we do have some services that we do provide on a monthly schedule. So it depends on what you need. Some illnesses are more of a one-time encounter and others are more of a monthly ongoing relationship.
So if I wanted to take advantage of this, I just like go online and just say, hey, does this sound bad? Like I just cough into my phone.
Well, we don't have an audio triage yet where you cough into your phone, but I'll take that under consideration.
Open
for future.
My mouth and go, is this swollen?
So yes, one of the things that makes us a little different than other telemedicine platforms is that we are symptom driven. And so you might say something like, I think I have a urinary tract infection. And then you would come to our website and you're interacting with us first, again, all through your phone. Mm-hmm. You would answer a couple of simple questions so we can kind of get you headed down the right illness, if you will, channel. And then once you've done that, we collect some other information from you and we get you within minutes connected with a physician who, processes all the information you've provided already and then can provide you treatment. That treatment sometimes is a prescription medication or a prescription test. And essentially our brand promise is purchase to prescription in 30 minutes. So rather than waiting days to be seen by your doctor, you can be feeling better within minutes.
And then, so now, is this for the person that goes to those websites and then types in symptoms and then they get scared and then they kind of panic and they don't know what to do?
I think that our company is for a lot of different people. I would say that the person it usually serves is, you know, the busy mom, for example, who is juggling 1,000 things already, and something as simple as a sore throat could really derail her entire week. It's for a young professional who maybe doesn't have a primary care physician, because now that's really common with mm-hmm. millennials and Gen Zs that they just haven't established care. So it's more about providing, you know, convenient, affordable, and still accurate care in what is, you know, the new normal for everyday people.
Now, how do you get the word out to the possible client of yours? Like, how do they even know this is a choice amongst all the different things? You know, there's an urgent care on every corner nowadays.
Sure. So, I mean, in addition to traditional marketing, we have really found that we've been successful in getting in front of a captive audience through independent pharmacies. And that's also something that makes us pretty different than a lot of other telemedicine companies, is that we haven't partnered per se with an insurance company or a specific employer. And so that if you don't have to be part of one of those groups, those pre-established groups, to access mm-hmm. us. Any consumer can become a patient of ours. And again, we have partnered with independent pharmacies so that when you as a patient are standing in your pharmacy thinking to yourself, well, hey, I think I might need this medication, or I want to be started on birth control. Before, you'd have to leave the pharmacy, make the appointment, and end up back in the pharmacy to fill your meds. Now, the pharmacist is aware of what we do. They're a credible resource to tell you about the process, and mm-hmm. you can go ahead and do it right then and there while you're standing in the pharmacy.
Now, how did the idea come about?
Well, so I'm an emergency medicine physician, and that's where my professional journey started. And among the many things I was taking care of, like heart attacks and, you know, trauma patients, I was also treating folks who had something as simple, again, as a sore throat. And at the time, I was very much of the mindset of, well, why wouldn't you go somewhere else? There's got to be a better place to be treated for this. And when I started to investigate these quote unquote better alternatives, I realized that every one of them had a shortcoming. They either weren't convenient, you know, only open during banking hours or regular business hours, or they were extremely expensive, especially in the setting of really high deductible healthcare plans, which are very popular now. And so I realized that people were defaulting to the ER because, again, they either didn't have the resources or they didn't have the time to get to one of these alternatives. So that was the genesis.
So like you were literally seeing like something where you were triaging some like a gunshot or something dramatic and then going to someone with a sore throat.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Like in this, within the same 30 minute.
Absolutely. Yes.
And what was the ratio of sore throat to violent
That's a really
crime?
Good question. I mean, I would, we don't typically call it violent crime, but I do love that. I mean, for the most part, the patients that we're seeing, especially in a, you know, in a high acuity, high volume ER, like say, you know, in here in Atlanta, it is skewed towards the very ill. But either way, even if it's only 10% or 5% of patients who are there who don't technically, you know, need to be there,
right,
there's a gap there in the system that we as a community need to fill. We have to figure out how better to present that patient to a more reasonable, you know, healthcare provider. So that was the genesis of the company. It was, hey, we put in every other industry, we put the consumer in the driver's seat. We have made things convenient and on demand for them. Why aren't we doing this in healthcare? And so we, you know, quickly transitioned to telemedicine and, again, realized that for the telemedicine platforms that are out there, there are gaps, there are deficiencies. And so we tried to create this vision of it'll all come right to you.
Now, back in the day, people had primary care physicians. Is that not happening anymore or happening less?
It's definitely happening less. When you look at the stats, I think, you know, in the millennial generation and younger, it's like 65% will establish care with a primary doctor and it's decreasing every year. And so I think just the culture of what we do, people are turning more to, again, an on-demand concept. They're turning more to technology to fix these, or, you know, to fill these, roles. And, yeah, I think that we still at Physician 360 strongly believe in the concept of having a medical home, but in realizing that not everyone will establish one, we want to be there for them if they don't.
And then in your model, is it you want the person just, okay, they have some kind of thing. It's, you know, 11 o'clock at night and it's not convenient. It's Friday. They're not going to be able to go see their doctor until Tuesday or Monday. You want them to contact you or go through your system. That's one group of people.
Correct.
But then you want do you want the person to use you kind of as a primary care, like for all this kind of easy stuff?
So I would say we're most consistent with a virtual urgent health clinic. So right now we're not managing chronic illnesses like your ongoing blood pressure or your ongoing diabetes. That's not really the vision of what we had. You know, is it possible that we extend into those arenas in the future? Sure. But right now, it's more about, incidental things that pop up and, again, can be a real disruption to your life. We do have some other service offerings that are more ongoing and less of a distraction or disruption, if you will. So, for example, now we have an entire birth control prescription service. That's not necessarily a, you know, it came out of nowhere type of right. situation, but it is something that especially for, say, a young woman who's in college or a young woman who is busy on the go, doesn't have time to establish a relationship with an OB-GYN and go in person to be seen. Same thing with erectile dysfunction. This is not something that typically is oops out of nowhere, but something that people are really looking for a convenient and discreet way of getting customized and personalized care while still seeing a doctor. I think that's important to note. This is not just a system where you go on and fill out some questions and, you know, interact with a computer screen. You actually interface with a medical professional, which is
pretty
important.
Quickly in the process. Is that every time you communicate with the doctor, or some things once they know who you are that it can be like, oh, just refill the prescription?
Yeah, once you establish a relationship with us, all of those initial meetings are within a real-time audio video encounter. After that, yes, you have the ability to chat and message with your physician in case it's something as simple as like what you just described, a medication refill.
Now, how do you get physicians involved with this? Is this something that they do kind of on their free time, like, or is this their job now?
So when we first started, we were only in a handful of states. We're now active in 47 states throughout the country. Most of our medical providers are working on this in conjunction with other things. So this is still something that is relatively part-time for them. Depending on the state and on the volume in that particular place, we do have a few folks who are coming on board in a fuller time capacity. And that is a model that we've considered going forward. But for the most part, this is part of their professional pie, if you will. It's one piece.
Now, do they have to, like, if I'm in Georgia, then is my physician going to be in Georgia? Is that like a rule?
Yes. So every state has slightly different regulation around telemedicine and around the practice of telemedicine. But to this point, yes, if you are in Georgia, for example, you will be seeing a board certified medical professional who is Georgia based and licensed in that state.
Now, how do you get the word out to physicians that this opportunity exists?
You know, I think part of what has made that, I wouldn't say easy, none of this has been easy,
right,
but
sure.
that has been helpful is that I'm a physician and my co-founder, Dr. Rob Laporte, he's also a physician. And we've been able to, at least at the beginning and the first phases, kind of go to the first, second, and maybe even third degree of our networks.
Right.
And that has generated a lot of momentum. And now, sort of through word of mouth, things are spreading a little bit easier on their own. We've worked with, you know, a few different, through a few different Facebook groups or other things where you'd find you would commonly find a provider captive audience. But I think a lot of it started with just our networks.
Now, when you were getting the word out to individuals, do you work with companies to offer this as a service, like a benefit to their employees, like they have some like nurse helplines and things like that?
We have started to have conversations with employer groups. This is becoming a benefit that they see a lot of value in, to your point, especially for keeping down, you know, insurance payments and premiums. So we have had conversations with different employers about bringing this as a benefit.
Now, how did you take it from kind of the idea stage into testing it in a small kind of beta way to see if there would be traction or people would be open to this? Like were you the first doctors, you know, you and your co-founder were the first people answering the phone? And
yeah, we were the first everything at the very beginning. We were literally, you know, the ones adjusting the website on a Friday and then answering the
call.
So
you built the initial website or you had a team?
Yeah, we had small but mighty team.
Right.
And at the beginning, it's like any startup, you know, we were doing it all. And so wearing more than a dozen hats. But now, luckily, again, we've had enough traction and support that we can start at least, limiting a little bit the types of things that we have to do. I haven't messed with the website in quite some time. And I haven't myself, you know, I'm not the doctor that you get anymore when you interact with us. But
now when you were the doctor, like when it went live for the first time, you're like, okay, we're live. Now we can take, you know, people contacting us. Like how long did it take before the first person contacted you? Do you remember that?
I want to say it was maybe a few weeks.
So it took like several weeks. So you're like, is this thing working? Like, how come no one's contacting us? Like what were you doing
we were finding patients through the pharmacy network at that time. So we knew there'd be a little bit of a waterfall, a delay in that cascade,
right,
as far as, okay, the website is live, but that means essentially nothing. Now we've got to get to the first hurdle is the B2B approach, and then that will take some time. And then once we cleared that, then it was the B2B2C. And so I think we knew there'd be a delay. I don't think we got too far outside of what we considered to be a reasonable delay. I wasn't panicking quite yet. I've panicked about many other things since then.
Not that. So when that first person contacted you and then, you know, it was go time, how did that go?
Did you
take the call or your partner?
It was one of my partners, but I can actually still remember that person's name. I guess it's like when people put that first dollar
on the wall, right?
On the wall, but because it really, it made it real. And, mm-hmm. you know, we had been working at putting the building blocks and the infrastructure in place for some time. So to see it come to fruition and, I mean, I guess even if we'd never had another patient after that, I would have at least felt validated
in our vision that we had gotten to that
point.
Yes. Right.
Yes.
And then was it something simple or was it like a, oh no, this is like a really hard thing?
No. So again, we, we, I think, do a great job at, number one, we're pretty selective with what we treat. And number two, we do so much of the upfront data gathering that by the time the physician gets involved, again, they're getting presented this perfectly curated snapshot of what the patient's right. going through because they've already answered all these questions.
Because
online.
The patient has to go through this kind of funnel where they're kind of explaining everything pretty detailed.
Correct.
So the physician can make an informed yes. kind of diagnosis.
So if I remember correctly, I'm pretty sure that person had sore throat, you know, something that.
Right.
And to your point, I mean, now, you know, 18 months of being, you know, available as a service to patients, I think we've only had a handful of folks that we've ever been like, this really needs to be seen in person now. We need you to go to the ER, you know.
Oh, so that's happened occasionally.
Yes. I mean, our providers are excellent and they have, you know, an appropriate threshold for what needs to be evaluated mm-hmm. in person. And if that's what's required, then obviously that's what they're going to advise. But I would say the system is set up in a great way and people tend to, and to some degree, self-triage to the point where that happens only a handful of times.
Now, how has the journey been? Like, has it the way that you envision it, or what kind of turns have you taken? Did you have to make a big pivot, or has it stayed within the kind of the lines?
I would say, you know, has it been what I anticipated? Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's been very nebulous. People often ask me, you know, what is hard about this, and I explain that. There's a huge difference to me personally between, you know, my medical journey was hard. Don't get me wrong. Getting right. through medical school and training is very difficult, but it's very linear. And you kind of have a great idea of the target that you're trying to hit.
And you know how it's going
to
end.
That's it. The target doesn't right. really move. I mean, right. unless something, you know, really comes out of left field, the target is always the same and right. you drive at that target. And as long as you have perseverance, you're pretty,
right.
you know, and you're intelligent and you do the right things, but you're pretty likely to get there once you start that down that road. With this, it's very nebulous. It's
a lot of unknowns.
So many unknowns. And so I think to answer your question, I mean, there's definitely been pivots. Mm-hmm. I would say it's been more in the form of micro pivots over time. You know, we've definitely evolved our model, evolved the way we approach the customer, tried different channels as far as, you know, again, capturing their attention. And, you know, healthcare is a highly regulated environment. And right. so constantly responding to the nuance of, you know, healthcare regulation. So there's definitely been pivots. But I guess looking back, what I should have anticipated or what I should have thought the journey would be like would just be this constant adventure, which it has in fact been that.
Right. And the constant change, like you're always having to
exactly.
adjust.
Constant change is the normal.
Right. Which is hard for some people.
Yes.
Now, how do you find this kind of level of entrepreneurship in other physicians? Is that becoming more and more a thing to do that because of the challenges in the healthcare industry and things changing so rapidly and dramatically, and depending on who's in power, it could be a whole new game, you know?
Yes, I've definitely seen, even over the last, let's say, 5 years, an uptick in physicians who are pursuing, you know, side hustles, or even those who are going back to school to get an MBA, for example. I definitely think there's been an increase in interest. It's difficult because there are so many parts of the healthcare system that make it difficult for doctors to truly pursue something like this. You know, you spend a lot of time in training and you kind of, you know, whether it's for financial reasons or just you're emotionally bought into playing this role right. within healthcare. So walking away from that takes, you know, you take a huge risk on a lot of different fronts. I think also, you know, you're not, as a clinician, you're a known quantity to most healthcare entities, right? So if you see X number of patients, that kind of generates, right. you know, X number of revenue for the healthcare system. It takes a little bit more risk even on the part of the healthcare community to say, we're going to give you some time to pursue this other thing.
Right.
But I mean, obviously I'm biased. I think that that is what is best for all of us. If we allow people like doctors who are on the front lines of patient care, I mean, they're literally seeing where the gaps are in a very
right,
nuanced
in real
way.
Time.
Every day.
It's not a hypothetical.
Right. I think we would all receive better care if we protected some of that time and emotion and energy for physicians to pursue these types of ideas.
Now, you mentioned that independent pharmacies are an important group for you. That was the assumption that you would work with them, or was that one of the pivots?
Not initially. I mean, at the very beginning, no, that was not, you know, I think we saw our customer, we saw in the vision that we're helping the patient, the end
right.
user. I think it was, to your point, part of the early
kind of the customer discovery where you're learning
exactly
how am I going to get to this person?
How do we get in front of them in a credible way? Because again, we were a totally unknown quantity. So right. To say to a random person, not
trust
only is
us,
it,
right, we're not, on the internet.
Exactly.
What could go wrong?
The internet is 100% reliable right. at all times, said no one ever. Right. And so exactly. I mean, we were an unknown quantity and it was expensive, right? It was expensive to from a marketing perspective, right. The cost of obtaining a customer at that point was really expensive. And so we realized in that process that independent pharmacies also had needs that
and they
could
have
help
unique
them
challenges that they're trying to differentiate themselves from these big monster players.
That's exactly right. They want a way to compete with MinuteClinics, and we came along and we're like, listen, we can offer
we're
you
a challenger brand too. Yep. Let's team up.
Right. And we can offer you a turnkey solution for offering clinical services. So mm-hmm. we actually help them almost like overnight morph into what is the equivalent of, like, say, an urgent care or a minute right. clinic. And so that, I think that was a game changer, realizing that there was that gap for them and that we could be better, you know, stronger.
How did that come about? Was that kind of a happy accident, or did you know an independent pharmacist and like, hey, let's talk about this?
No, it was honestly the initial idea was really through a conversation I had with a mentor. And then it was, you know, a type of pilot. It was like, mm-hmm. hey, this seems like, really, rationally, this would make
sense.
A lot of sense.
Would you be open to trying it?
Mm-hmm. And it literally started, you know, door to door cold calling type of thing. And then,
how many independent is that still a thing? Or are they slowly getting bought out by these larger entities?
They are decreasing, but there is like 20,000 of them still in the country.
20,000?
So,
really?
Yes. Although we don't, they're not as quote unquote notable. You might not have, you might not even recognize that you passed one on the way to work today.
Right. But sometimes they're like by the hospital, like they have an office
yep.
next to them.
Yes.
So there's 20,000 of them?
I believe, I haven't checked the exact number, but yes, on that magnitude. I mean, and so they're a force to be reckoned with for sure.
Right.
And like I said,
so you're just like dialing somebody in your team is just calling independent pharmacists?
Well, now we've gotten a little bit more sophisticated with our strategy. But yes, at the beginning, that is what it was. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing story. So now you're almost in all the states, or is it you're going to have a challenge in those last remaining states, or is it eventually you'll get to all 50 states?
We will get eventually to all 50 states. Again, every state's a little bit different, but we will get to all 50 states.
And then, so what do you need more of right now? Do you need more pharmacists? You need more customers? Like what's the contingency that you need more of right now?
I mean, I would never turn down either. So I definitely, you know, marketing now, you know, our go-to-market with the customer, so that now that we've built this network with the independent pharmacies, you know, part of how we succeed is that they succeed. And so getting the end user to be aware of what we do and to...
But that helps the independent pharmacist as well.
Exactly. So,
right.
So yeah.
And then if somebody wanted to learn more, what's the best way?
Best way is to visit our website, which is physician360.co. And you can follow us on social media as well.
Well, congratulations on the momentum. That is fantastic. It's an inspiring story. We love hearing entrepreneurs come in here and share that story, because I think when we get a chance to peek into how you got where you are now and where you're headed, I mean, it gives us all that little bit of extra energy that sometimes we need, because every day doesn't go like the storybook, right?
That's right. That is absolutely right.
Hey, stay with us. We're going to visit with one more guest, okay?
Absolutely.
All right. If you're just now joining us, you're listening to Atlanta Business Radio. We are speaking with a couple of fantastic entrepreneurs this morning. Today's episode is brought to you in part by ARC, American Reaper Graphics Corporation. If you print with it, print on it, or simply want it printed, head on over to arcinatlanta.com or reach out and ask to speak with Mindy Godwin personally. You can reach her at 770-394-2465. All right, up next on Atlanta Business Radio, we have with us CEO for Biolog ID. Please join me in welcoming to the show Mr. Troy Hilzenroth. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, we're delighted to have you. I'm sorry you have to follow that act. That
Very
was pretty
tough.
Inspiring conversation there.
Yeah, you never want to follow like the all-star. I fall in love with this today.
Well, before we get too far into your interview, Troy, tell us about Biolog. How are you serving folks?
Biolog ID is a company that has a solution that we feel we're going to change the standard of care of the way sensitive, high-value products are distributed, stored, and tracked within the healthcare system.
And what are an example of some of that sensitive products?
The one we're really focused on right now are blood products. So there's there's blood products are there's over 20 million transfusible events, throughout the year on mm-hmm. average. And we're talking about red blood cells, platelets, and fresh frozen plasma.
And then, so what is the problem?
The problem is you have a very complex supply chain. So you have multiple different products. Those products are then even broken down in its subcategory. So again, red blood cells, platelets, and plasma, we'll just look at those. There's whole blood, there's fractionated products. Each one has a different shelf life. Even within each product, it has a different shelf life depending on what decoagulants used in to draw them. And then there's a cold chain. So some need to be refrigerated, some need to be frozen, and then some need to be agitated. So very complex. It's manually done now. And
like, what does manually done mean?
Manually, the last big innovation in this transfusion medicine supply chain is the barcode. So we feel that we have a better mousetrap kind of, instead of inventing a faster horse, we're moving to the Model T. So
you're going to a different way of doing everything. So that's pretty disruptive then.
So it's not everything. Basically, when someone would donate blood, there's about 6.8 million people who donate blood in the United States every year. That whole blood is then taken to a blood center, and then it's processed into primarily those three products.
Mm-hmm.
After it's processed, that's when we want to have a chain of custody associated with that product from the point of origin in the production to when it's transfused into a patient.
So then how does it get from those centers to the hospital or doctor's office?
Great question. Those centers, blood centers, so our two market segments are blood centers, where you would go donate blood and they process it, and then blood banks. Blood banks reside within a healthcare system or in a hospital. So those blood centers sell these products to the blood banks, and then the blood banks then distribute the blood products to the OR, the ER, the gunshots we were talking about, the Angela trees, oncology infusion centers, those types of areas where blood products are
needed. So where those 6.8 million people donate blood, that's a group.
Yep.
So that's the front lines of where you get blood?
Blood is a product that we cannot manufacture. We have to get donors, people who are obviously very
generous,
very generous people. And, so this is something that's it's a life-saving component, very high clinical value, these products.
Do you have too much blood or not enough? You never have enough blood? Is this one of these things you never have enough?
You never have enough, and that's one of the areas of value we think.
So no one's throwing blood away?
No, people are throwing blood away.
Are they?
Yeah, because there's a certain shelf life for these products. And if it's not efficiently utilized, you're taking this very valuable product and you're throwing it away. So our solution, again, makes this your whole value chain digitally visible. So you're able to.
Are you using blockchain?
Not at this moment. We do not. One of the enabling technologies we use is RFID.
And then, okay, so now in the current system, it goes, the person donates blood, they get a cookie, they leave, their blood now goes to a blood bank.
That's an important part of the process.
Yep, that goes to the blood center processes it, they sell it to the blood bank.
And the blood bank now has got it there.
Yep.
And then so a hospital goes, I need this type, and then they just, FedEx it over there?
Or Angela says, hey, I need, Angela says, hey, I got a gunshot wound in. I need some more.
I send the medical student to the blood bank, and I said, go pick this up.
Really?
Yeah.
Or, no, in their car?
No, it's in the hospital. It's in the hospital.
Okay, it's in the hospital.
Or, so what we, so that's kind of the process now. Yeah.
And then, so where does your system, plugs in after
the
donation?
Correct.
But before the hospital?
It could be either both.
So before or after the blood bank?
The farther up the value chain you get, the more valuable it is to the whole healthcare system. If we tag it right at production, it's more valuable. But hospitals, say I'm a large healthcare system, I have 15 hospitals, I have 40 hospitals. Now I'm responsible for purchasing and distributing bloods throughout my whole hospital network.
Right.
So I need to be able to do that very efficiently. What our solution does, it's a combination of a software platform, hardware, and consumables which again gives you this digital visibility to these products throughout the whole supply chain. Take the example we just talked about, this gunshot wound. Instead of sending the medical student to the, you know, to the blood bank within the hospital, we could have a visibility to that and chain of custody that in the ER where it's needed for these O negative, you know.
So somebody says O negative, I need this much O negative. That gets, and you can be more proactive?
Correct. You could be more proactive. It could be sitting in the ER. You would again have visibility to it. You know if it's taken out for what, you know who took it out, you know what was taken out, you know
and
when
it
was
taken
out.
And then you know now I have less of this, so I need more, so then.
There you go. There you go, exactly. So you could have basically predictability. And more importantly, where we're heading is you interface with the hospital information systems. You have all the scheduled events where there would be potential for blood products being utilized. Right. So now I know the demand, and I can match that back to the supply and have a more accurate donor campaign, right? Because if I send the big red bus out to go, you know, get blood in this parking lot, and everyone goes down and everyone gives me a certain type of blood, a lot of that blood's probably going to get thrown out if it's it's an AB blood and it's a blood that's more specific for a donor to have,
right.
Just the way your body is. There's different types. I won't get into the details, but bottom line is you want to be able to match your donation to what's needed. And if I have visibility into that, then I have predictability of how I could go.
So that means they can do an initial test. They know I'm AB negative, and they go, okay, we're good with AB negative. Come back next month.
Yeah. Or if you're, say you're O negative, that's the universal donor, right?
Right.
So I could give that blood to anybody. I want to know who you are because, yeah, I do want you to come back, especially in times of need when I'm at low.
So they don't have a database of that? Like when you donate, they don't kind of?
No, they're just becoming that's just
is
becoming
that a
more
privacy
prevalent.
Thing? Like they're not allowed to know that?
You could opt in. Yeah, I mean,
right.
your donor would opt into that. But, yeah, there would be some HIPAA.
Right, but if you had a database of that, that would be extremely useful, especially in a crisis, I would imagine.
Absolutely it would.
And that's not being done now?
It is. It's growing. But here's the thing that's missing is getting the information from all the surgery schedules, the chemotherapy infusion schedules, the L&D components. So now I have visibility of all the blood types of the people who are coming in, and I have predictability of what needs to be in that hospital at the right time.
So now, who is the one that's the barrier to making this dream a reality, to make it more automated and more kind of efficient?
Well, I would say this. The digitization of healthcare is well underway. Some areas are much more progressed than others. Transfusion medicine is probably some healthcare systems are using carbon paper to do this. So I think it was one of the, opportunities I saw in this market of healthcare and why I transitioned over to Biolog. So.
Now, let's talk about your background a little bit. This is not a kind of a linear path for you, right?
No. I have a very non-traditional path. I think it kind of piggybacks with the earlier conversation. I classically trained as a pharmacist. I graduated Ohio State as a pharmacist.
Look at this. And could you have planned this?
This is actually a business meeting for me.
Yeah, we need. So there are actually 20,000 independent pharmacies, about 20,000 tier one Walgreens and CVS, and then 20,000 like retailers, like the big grocery store. So there's 20,000. Used to be in my old company, but my career path is very nonlinear.
Tell us about somewhere you became a firefighter. Where did that fit in this?
Yeah. So there's even more. So
welcome, Angela. We wanted you to meet a firefighter this morning, and there you go.
We're heading a new direction.
So I lived in Hawaii for a while. Managed a small equity fund. Long story. I become a firefighter. I always, in kindergarten, when the teacher says, "Hey, draw what you want to be when you grow up. Your favorite animal." I drew a little guy, and he sprayed a burning house. So I became a firefighter. I was a pharmacist too, but I became a firefighter, ended up getting elected to run the Union of Cleveland, Ohio, Professional Firefighters Association, Local 93. The best leadership training ground you could ever have.
Sure.
Was involved in politics, involved in three Ohio Supreme Court cases, passed a law in Ohio, did a lot of lobbying on Capitol Hill. Long story short, great career, decided that, you know, firefighting was firefighting, at least in Cleveland, Rust Belt City, didn't diversify a tax base, decided to get back into healthcare. I took a job at Carolina's healthcare system at the time in Charlotte.
Wait, that's really crazy because I trained at Carolina's.
So my job there was to redesign the drug distribution of the second largest hospital. There was Northeast Medical Center. And then we chose a company, Omnicell, met their founder and CEO. He gave me an offer I couldn't refuse, poached me, and then worked for Omnicell for 10 years, ran a global division basically based on medication adherence. And so Biolog, this opportunity, a recruiter.
The man can't hold a job.
That's obvious.
recruiter called me up, Corn Ferry in Atlanta. The guy drove him in Atlanta and recruited me to come over to Biolog. And yeah, here I am. So crazy.
So now when you heard about the story and it resonated with you, the inefficiency, that was obvious, right? Now, what made you think like, okay, this is a real solution? How did that, you know, for you, because that was a risk on your part. I mean, obviously risk isn't that big of, you're okay with risk, but to make a change like this is pretty dramatic.
Yep.
So then what was the thing that was like, okay, we do have something here. This is something I can kind of grow.
Well, I think it was analogous to some of the things we did at Omnicell, where we looked to really change the standard of care, the way medication was managed in non-acute care environments. So outside the hospital, we came up with a solution that is now the standard of care and is pretty well adopted. So I kind of started in this movie before. One of the things about Biolog, they're in 12 countries around the world right now. North America, they just entered North America about 24 months ago. And then I joined in June to really the board of directors. It's a private equity backed company. Right. And they basically said, hey, we want to go for it in North America. So they put their money where their mouth was, hired me. There was three people in North America at the time, and that was in June of 19, and now there's 18, and you know, we really need to build out our go-to-market team and commercialize this here. So
now, what's the challenge to go to market now?
Challenge go to market, and Angela talked to it, you know, to these nuances. Healthcare is a very risk adverse,
and it's a moving target too. Absolutely. I mean, it's just I don't even know how you attack this because it could change so dramatically depending on who's in charge. I mean,
you're right. It's
how do you prepare for, you know, you got to almost prepare for both sides winning.
Well, basically, you know, one, you're looking to add value, right? If you're adding value, we add value really in three areas: operationally, financially, and clinically. That's going to resonate.
It'll take care of itself.
That'll take care of itself. So, but it's about education. It's, you know, we need to engage, leverage existing relationships. I mean, it's hand to hand combat in this startup mode. And, you're looking for a beachhead, right? You're looking to build upon momentum. So that's one of our three areas of focus that the team is on right now is expanding our footprint and demonstrating real world value. So
now, who are the people you have to get in front of most, like today? What's the one that at the end of the day you're high fiving that, hey, we got a contact here now?
Got it. It all depends. So two market segments we're in: blood centers, where you go donate blood, and blood banks, which are in large healthcare systems. So blood centers, it could be the CEO of a small regional blood center or the executive staff at a large one. So you get American Red Cross is the largest blood center in the United States.
And that's by far, right?
By definitely order of magnitude, they're the largest. But there are other large blood, Vitalant is one, One Blood is one. There's definitely large regional blood centers. Getting to their this is a strategic decision. We want to engage a strategic.
Right. You're not asking them to just tweak something. You're asking them to make a change, right?
Make a change. It allows you to normalize your relationship with these healthcare systems when you have visibility to what stocks there. And it's more like vendor managed inventory. So you could provide a higher level of service at a lower cost, and everybody likes that, right? So, and then in a blood banks, we need to engage in the healthcare systems, you know, hierarchy. Initial point of contact could be the transfusion medical director or the lab director or things. So there's physicians and there's operational people within healthcare systems that we need to engage.
And then when you're asking them to make this kind of change, there's so many, it's such a complex decision. It doesn't just affect them. It, you know, no yeah. one wants to get fired for making a change like this.
Sure, sure. So there's ways we can minimize that risk. You know, we start small, take one component of your, you know, say just platelets, just start out with platelets or red blood cells. Or
so there is a IRL. Way to kind of beta test this to show the value without going all in.
Correct. And it's basically, I think our solution is it doesn't take compliance of humans for this to work. It basically takes, they just have to do what they do now. And by leveraging this technology, it gives them so much more insight into what they're doing and their inventories and all these great things I could talk all day about. So
now, what's been the most rewarding part of the journey so far?
Most rewarding part of the journey is there's not been one person that I have talked to in this industry, whether it's, you know, I'm coming from medication management, so I'm involved in healthcare, but never was I involved in transfusion medicine. Not one person say this is a dumb idea.
Right. Right. So I that's encouraging.
Yeah. They're like, man, we need this.
Right.
This could help us. And the other key thing is, I think even looking out, you got to have a platform to correlate your process to an outcome. Ultimately, there's a belief. I have this belief, but within the Canadian Blood Services is the large, it's like the American Red Cross, but they do all Canada except Quebec. There's a belief out there, and there's some great physicians doing some really good work to correlate the products that are used to a better outcome.
Right.
So the age of the blood, the types, you know, there's so many subtypes of blood in that right now. There's not much research out there about that. So I think creating this platform and then the next level of value, or the value we see in the future, is then we can say, hey, you know, Troy's in the hospital. He's got this condition. You know what? If you treat him with this type of blood product, it's going to increase. He's going to have a better outcome for it, which helps everybody.
And then you have research that backs that up?
We'd have to work on that. There's a few physicians that do have some, but they're cobbling data from all these disparate data sources, and it's very difficult to do at scale. So
now for you, how are you kind of getting your education is the kind of the main driver right now. That's your go-to-market is try to educate both all the parties just on the benefits of this. So you're like speaking at conferences and trade shows and things like that.
Yeah. I'm coming on great radio shows like this, but we need a team, right? So the focus really right now for me is, you know, there's only one of me and I'm not that talented. So I need to get a great team. Great teams do phenomenal things. So being able to hire a great team, and I think, again, we started at 3, we're at 18 now. But you're right, the focus has been getting the right people who could go out, gain access, and tell the story.
And evangelize.
Yes.
Yeah. So now, if somebody wanted to learn more, right now, so you're hiring, I would guess.
I just hired someone starting in March. Right now, I have zero open positions. Mm-hmm. Right now, we have to basically, we have our phase one team to go get this product market fit. And
okay, so now it's time to do some work.
Yeah, we got to grind.
All right. And if somebody wants to learn more, what's the website?
www.biologid.com.
Good stuff, Troy. Thank you so much for sharing your story today.
My pleasure to be here.
All right. Thanks to both of our guests today, Angelo Fusaro and Troy Hilsenroth. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.